that's what they say. Easy. Anyone can whistle any old day. Easy.
The music of Stephen Sondheim in a recording by Steve Ross. The New York Times, many years ago, called the Crown Prince of New York Cabaret. Steve Ross joins me here in Studio A. He's known for his interpretations of the great American songbook, particularly the work of Noel Coward, George Gershwin, and Cole Porter. He's performed around the world, and tonight he'll be at the piano at Germano's Piattini here in Baltimore. Tonight's show is called An American in Paris, and it features songs by composers from both sides of the Atlantic, from Edith Piaf and Cole Porter to Maurice Chevalier and Jacques Brel. Steve Ross, it's great to meet you.
I want to go and see this guy. He sounds wonderful.
He does sound wonderful, doesn't he?
Nice to be here. Thank you for giving us a little slot here.
Well,
we appreciate that.
Happy to do it. When you come up with a program like this, An American in Paris, I mean, programming for a cabaret singer and artist is, it's 90% of the gig, isn't it?
It seems to be. It wasn't always that way. When I first came to town, in the 60s rather, when I visited up from Washington where I grew up, and I was able to become acquainted with the pillars of this work, which Mabel Mercer and Bobby Short.
Bobby Short.
They never programmed anything. And Mabel, curiously enough, never said a mumbling word between songs.
No patter.
No patter.
Wow.
Bobby has said something from time to time. But all that came later. And when I first went, Bobby did sets between 8 and 1. But he was the first one, he was a trailblazer, he was the first one to do 5 days a week instead of 6 and to do an early and a late show. So that all happened. And then I think because his big recording of Sings the Music of Cole Porter, people started doing thematic shows. The impresario who booked me into the Algonquin Hotel, Donald Smith, a great lover of cabaret, said, let's do a tribute. So that's Jerome Kern. So all of that came later in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, you just sang your best songs.
Yeah. This is a tune with a lyric by Alan J. Lerner called I've Been Married. Let's listen to a little bit of this. This is a recording you made a few years ago.
Yes.
I have tied the wedding knot until the blood began to clot. For living life connubially isn't any jubilee. I've seen how lovely loving starts and slowly turns to martial arts. I've been married.
What a great tune. And obviously a live performance that's been recorded here.
At the Algonquin.
Yeah. What does it mean to you to know a song? When do you decide, I'm ready to play this for an audience?
I'm a pretty quick study. And again, reflecting Mabel, it's the words. The words have to have a road into the connection of what I could make sense of, number one, and also, if I'm lucky, that I could feel. This one is very clever. I've not been married 8 times the way he is, 6 times, whatever he was. But it's a story that I can tell. So if the lyric works and amuses me and moves me, then I know I have a way into the song. If the tune is nondescript or not up to the words, you can always make that sound pretty good with the piano arrangement. But the words are critical for me. And we certainly in the songbook have an abundance of brilliant words.
Yeah, that's for sure. I wonder, how does, you've been playing for audiences for
ever.
How many years now, for a long time?
I've been playing for audience for, damn, let me just see, and I would say 60 years.
Yeah, 60-some years. So the difference between practicing in your apartment and playing a concert or making a record. I mean, when you're, how do you practice in your apartment?
I don't.
Mm-hmm. But did you ever practice in your apartment?
I rehearse. I don't practice scales and all that. I rehearse and I learn the song in my apartment. I go over and I always learn it with the music. And the words stay a little bit better in my mind with the music. But then I'm fortunately to have what I call...
By the music you're talking about, the printed music.
The printed music in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I try to look at what the composer wrote. When you go to Sondheim, not so much Porter and Berlin, but Sondheim and Kurt Weill, all of the accompaniments are very important. They give the color of that, as you know. And the left hand, I try to read exactly what he wanted to say, and then I might vary a little bit. The old-fashioned songs, you have a chord change, it's a C and an F and an F6, but I try to learn it the right way that he did it and then go away from it if possible. Then I'm very lucky to have my musical kitchen cabinet, so when I do my shows, I have my pals in who are kind and yet informed. Many informed people, and they say, do you really want to do that song there? How about over here? So they help me put the show together, and then I go to the public.
And when you're in the public, when you're playing a concert as opposed to rehearsing by yourself or even with your close circle, you're still thinking about fealty to the composer, but you've also got to think about putting your own individual stamp on the piece of art.
It's a wonderful word, fealty. I haven't. That's good for you. It's a nice word to hear on a Saturday, Friday morning. Yes, I have to be, but the energy that comes from the audience allows me to be free and go right into what my brain and heart are thinking. So it's much better. I always perform better in front of a crowd, most of the time, because that somehow the energy that comes from them and the affection and interest that comes from them fuels my own creative bit. So I come up with new arrangements all the time.
Is the American Songbook, which we know to be, you know, Gershwin and Cole Porter and Noel Coward, et cetera, is it expanding? We have mutual friends, Eric Comstock, Barbara Fasano.
Been down here often.
Many times. They've played Germanos many times.
Right.
You know, they're including tunes by Paul Simon or Stevie Wonder or Joni Mitchell or, you know, more contemporary composers. Is that something that... you welcome, that you don't care about, or how do you think?
In my mind, I say it half in jest, that the songbook stopped at December 31st, 1979. The 70s and the era of the singer-songwriters, of whom you've just mentioned, I still think are absolutely part of the song. When we get into the 80s and more dance and more rhythmic things, I kind of decided to stick with what I knew. But many, many beautiful songs in the 60s and 70s. I don't happen to sing many of them, but I'm certainly aware of them. And in New York, there are composer circles. They write some beautiful songs these days to be sung by one person in front of a small audience and to be recorded, one hopes. And, of course, sometimes show tunes can be extracted, not so much anymore. But sometimes you can take a song out of a show, not as much as you used
to. Yeah, because the shows are constructed differently than they used to be.
They are indeed. It's flown through, and it's hard to get that song. But if you're Mabel used to go to shows, that one.
Yeah, that one. Of course, you had movies that had particular
songs.
Yes,
movies have songs. For example, I was just going through the brilliant Michel Legrand songbook.
Yeah.
What
who just passed
genius,
away just some
genius
months
of all ago. Of those, the inexhaustible flow of melody, and he wrote so much for the movies. And those songs are beautiful songs, beautiful to sing.
Do you know, sort of right off the bat, the minute you hear a beautiful song, that it's a beautiful song? I mean, does it take you a while sometimes? Are there some songs that are in your repertoire that you have eased into over a period of time? Or is every tune just, boom, I got to do that one?
Well, I wish it were the four. I wish it were as for dramatic purposes. However, sometimes I look at the music and then, to my chagrin, I go in here. A program and somebody sings a jazz about a song, and I realize that's the song that I didn't pay attention to. So it's often when I hear it sung by somebody, or I go to the radio and hear it, I try to get it all from the sheet music, but sometimes I'm not as careful as I should be. A lot of the times, if a tune is beautiful, I hear it right away. I do.
As most people do. I mean,
that one.
Yeah. Early in your career, and I don't know if you're still playing it now, but you were a big ragtime aficionado.
Oh, I love ragtime.
What's the appeal of ragtime to you?
Ragtime.
Yeah. You and a lot of people.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's the friend. How should I put this? It's the comfort and friendliness of the changes, with some surprises, the invention in those boundaries, just with that left hand going. I adore ragtime. That was one of my very first jobs. Somebody said, if you don't have to practice every day, but if for your left hand, practice some ragtime, and for your right hand, practice some Bach, and you'll be fine for the rest of your life. I tried it once together. It was not, not successful.
Some things just not meant to be. But by themselves, absolutely.
Perfect, yeah.
Steve Ross, he'll be performing his cabaret show, An American in Paris, tonight at the Cabaret at Germano's Piattini in Little Italy here in Baltimore. Doors open at 6. Show starts at 7:30. And by the way, tomorrow, Steve will conduct a cabaret masterclass. You can come to our website, wypr.org/midday, for more information. It's a delight to speak with you.
Thanks for coming in. Yes, I wish you well.
And I wish you well.
Au revoir. Au revoir, mes amis.
Au revoir, mes amis. Bon. That's it for us today. Coming up Monday, microbiologist Michael Jacobson from the Center for Science and the Public Interest will join me to talk about food safety and nutrition. That's coming up Monday on Midday. We want to thank Bottoms Up Bagels for lunch today. Bottoms Up Bagels is a small batch pop-up bagel shop preparing hand-rolled New Jersey-style bagels, house-cured lox, and specialty cream cheeses inspired by the traditions of bagel making dating back to the 1940s. Bottoms Up Bagels offers customized catering packages of all kinds. You can find them at the Waverly Farmers Market and at bottomsupbagels.com. Midday's director and engineer is Luke Spicknell. My favorite group is Luke's group called Spooled Up. Catch 'em. They're dynamite. Rob Civic, Sienna Greaves, and Kathleen Cahill produced the program. Jamila Krempel is our digital producer. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Midday theme music. Our interns are Morgan Ome and Abba Amoa. Thanks for joining us. We leave you with some more music by Stephen Sondheim, performed by the inimitable Steve Ross. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great weekend.
Opening doors, finally knowing the one that I wanted was yours. Making my entrance again with my usual flair. Sure of my lines, no one is there.